It's amazing, every time I close my eyes in a Friday afternoon meditation, there's not so many people here. I open my eyes and it's all magnified. I think next time I'm going to put the donation box in front of me before I meditate, and afterwards it magnifies. I don't know, maybe. Anyway, so it's meditation. Oh, sorry, not meditation, the talk. Done that already. I'm chilled out. Excellent. Very good. So, for this evening's topic, I start with the subject and see where it ends up. And just last Wednesday evening at Monastery down in Serpentine, I asked one of our regulars, what should I talk about tonight? And he gave me a subject, and I talked about something else. So I'm going to talk about his subject tonight. Just see, weave a little talk around the subject of peace. Subject. About, especially just what is peace and how it's caused, how we can create peace, and what are the obstacles to peace in our modern world. And I'm starting off with an old, put this in one of my books, a very brilliant story, and a very Buddhist story. It was a story of, it just happened to be a nun in the story, but it could have been a monk. And this nun was living in a cave, very peaceful and simple life. And just like our monks do, in the morning she took her little alms bowl and went into the village, and there the villagers put enough food in her bowl to live and survive for that day. You can't be more simple than that. And that's a monastic Buddhist monastic. Beg for alms. We don't actually ask for anything. They just actually, they know we're coming, they put things in there. Very simple, to keep us going. And when she came back into her cave and she ate her meal, she found out that while she was away in a village for alms, there was a little mouse who had eaten a little hole in her robe. And that little mouse had eaten some cloth from her robe. So she got out the needle and thread and sewed on a patch. And if you see some of our monks here, we've all got patches on my robe. I've got a patch on my robe in the back here. We all patch our robe. We don't just throw things away once they've got a hole in them. We patch them up. And actually one of the monks, he had so many patches on his robe, I had to tell him, please, change to a new robe, because you're going overseas. If they see how many patches you've got on your robe, they think there's no way they're going to let you into their country, because you can't afford anything. Either that, or they think you're a clown from the local circus. But anyway, this nun, she patched on another patch on her robe, and as she was patching her robe, she started thinking, why do I little mouse? There must be a solution to us. The idea came up. Get a cat. So the next day she went into the village. She asked one of her supporters, have you got a spare cat which I can put in my cave? Not to kill the mouse, because the mouse will run away at the smell of a cat. So, of course, there's plenty of cats in the village, so they got a nice little kitten and they put it in the cave, and sure enough, there was no mouse. But the little kitten had to have something to eat. The village, for alms food, she also had to ask for something for her cat. Some milk, and maybe a fish or something. And so she was always asking the villagers for milk every day, and she thought, surely there must be a solution to this. And she thought, yes, I know the solution. I will ask the villagers if they've got a spare cow. And then I can milk the cow myself to get milk for the cat to keep the mouse away. Now I don't have to keep bothering people. It's more efficient. So she went in the village, and they were so supportive of her, they managed to find a cow and give the cow to the nun. But then the nun had to keep on asking every day when she went into the village. She didn't need to ask for milk for the cat anymore, but she had to ask for grass for the cow. And that was a big burden on the villagers, always getting grass for the cow to feed the cat to keep the mouse away, that she thought, why don't we have like a big alms offering so I can buy a field? If I got my own field, then they don't need to ask the villagers for any grass anymore. So she did a big ceremony and collected enough money to buy a field. So she didn't need to ask for grass to feed the cow, to get the milk, to keep the cat, to keep the mouse away anymore, had her own field. But actually, just having a field, it's not a free lunch. You have to look after that field. And also, she was spending all the time looking after the field and cutting the grass and milking the cow to feed, to keep the mouse away, which meant... So she thought, this is too much of a burden. Let's keep life more simple. So she asked in the village, is there like a young man, a young boy, you know, especially like one of the naughty ones, because, you know, I can train the kid to be a really good kid and teach it some things, and in return, the boy can be like a temple boy, and he can look after the field and milk the cow and everything. And people in the village thought that was a really good idea, and they knew just the young kid, a really naughty kid, and obviously sending it to, you know, live with a nun would actually make the kid be a very good kid. I'm sure that me saying that, many of you may have a kid you would like to go and give to the nuns at Dhammasara. But anyway, so you got a kid, but then she thought, a young boy can't stay in a cave with a nun, has to have his own little quarters. So what should I do now? So then the next day she asked the villagers, can we get some wood and a carpenter to build a little hut just outside of the cave for the boy who can look after the field, to milk the cow, to give the milk, to keep the cat, to keep the mouse away so I don't have to keep patching my ropes. And like many monks, like even my monks, even some of the nuns, sometimes you go to Dhammasara and the poor nuns have to do all this building work and look after the builders and stuff, and that's what this nun was doing. She was so busy looking after the builders and doing the right thing, just make sure it's the right place and the hut's in the right way around. When somebody came up to her and said, oh, I'm having some difficulty with my meditation, can you please give me a hut? See, I have a hut for the boy who looks after the field so that I can have a cow who gives milk for the cat to keep the mouse. In the old days, she had plenty of time to talk to people. She had time and she had peace. So she saw the problem. And she told the boy to go back home to his family. It's your parents' job to teach you, not mine. And she sold the field. And she gave the cow away. And the cat she sent back into the village. Which meant the next day she went on alms round. When she came back, she found a little hole in her robe. The mouse had returned. And she happily put another patch on her robe and had the rest of the day peaceful, all by herself. Do you understand the meaning of that simile? Why is it that in our modern world we want a peaceful life and we think we have to have a cow and a field and a boy and a house and all these other things so we can be peaceful? That is the biggest mistake of our culture, thinking that we can solve the problems with more things, which means we have so much work to do, and which means we don't have any time. This is something which we never find in our world. In fact, as I noticed a long time ago, peace is so elusive in our modern world that the only place, actually there's two types of places, there's only two places you find peaceful people in this world. One is in monasteries, and the other one is in cemeteries, where you see people resting in peace. Can't you find And that first simile, you can see, is a perversion of perception. You're not getting the perception right. You're always thinking, if I want this simple. In your life, many of you are getting on a bit. Can you remember the old days when you didn't have much, but life was more simple and you had more time? And now we've got all these incredible inventions. TVs to entertain us. Devices so we can be contacted at any time of day or night, anywhere in the world, by our boss. It could be your husband, your wife, your parents, or children, or something, but you've all got so many bosses. And we have so many debts for the huge houses and all the other stuff we have. And we have to save up to go on holidays. Last week was Anzac weekend. How many of you went away? Why on earth, when you have a holiday, do you make it even more tiring by going somewhere? You spend so much money on your house or your place in the whole world. Your own pillows and blankets and beds. The best food, it's your home. Why is it that when you have a holiday, you run away? To me, I think whenever you have a holiday, you got your house. Spend your holiday in your own home. You don't have to pack. You don't have to get in your car and face the traffic. You don't have to worry about booking a hotel somewhere and finding it's noisy or it's all booked up, or the roof leaks, or you don't have to go overseas, for goodness sake, overseas, queuing in the check-in counters, being frisked as if you're some terrorist, an evil peak person, by the security, having to wait and figure it out. Why everybody, they can't wait to get on the aircraft to board, and they can't wait to get out afterwards first. Surely, if you like being on the aircraft so much, you're in the front of the queue going on first, you should be the last to come out. You must like it so much, I can't understand that at all. But why do you do that for? And then you get to the other end, you've got to walk and go through the customs again and ask all these questions. What is your purpose of your trip, sir? And waiting for tax seasons. Why do you do that for? Why can't you stay at home? Save so much more money and live a more simple life. I'll tell you one of the reasons why. It's because we just don't know how to do nothing anymore. We're afraid of peace. Just talking to someone just about their meditation, getting really nice and peaceful, but then the sound keeps interrupting them. The telephone goes off in the house, or their husband starts talking to their kid. Why is it we can't leave that alone? We know it's got nothing to do with us. It's not our call. They're not calling us. They're not talking about you. But why is it? Somebody talks and we say, what are they saying? Are they talking about me? They're not. It's a phone call about you. Why do you always have to check your emails? You're not important. Honestly. If you didn't check your emails for one weekend, the world wouldn't stop. The economy wouldn't get worse. It's bad enough as it is. It's not going to get worse because you don't check your emails. You're not the Treasurer of Australia. You're not the Prime Minister of Australia. So leave it alone, for goodness sake. But why can't you do that? It's very interesting. Why we keep checking emails, it goes to the heart of why we can't find peace in our life. A lot of times we like being busy. We're addicted to busyness. It makes us feel important. One of the monks told me this story a long time ago. He was an English monk. He was living in England and he was travelling on the train. And this was years and years ago. And he was on the train. He had his big, maybe the only person who had a mobile phone on the whole train, and talking to somebody. And so sounding really, really important. And then there was an emergency on the train. A woman who was pregnant, her waters broke, she was going to have a baby. So they all panicked. And they saw this man had a mobile phone and said, please, 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 Can we use your mobile phone? We need to call an ambulance, a doctor. And that's when they found out that this man's mobile phone was just a fake. It was a toy. He was only doing that to look important. He had a first mobile phone. He was faking it all along. True story. Why do people do that? It's again because we like to be important. We like to go traveling because that's what everyone else is doing. I used to, when I didn't have to do so many talks here, when I was only the second mic, I had this, and it faced the Southwest Highway. This was before they had the freeway down to Bunbury. So anyone going south would always go down the Southwest Highway, going to Bunbury and then further down south. And I'd be sitting on the evening, tons of cars, you know, the headlights, all going south, hardly anyone going north. And then I would be meditating on a Sunday and see all these lines of headlights going back to Perth. And I thought, what a waste of time. But why do you do that? Because everyone else does it. That's why. You're just total sheep. So my job is actually to try and give you a different perspective. To suggest you don't need. Try this. I challenge you. Don't answer your mobile phone for 24 hours. Not at all. What does it do to you? You get really worried, don't you? Maybe my daughter really needs me. Maybe my son has got an accident. Maybe I really need to check in this. Guaranteed, nothing will go wrong. The family doesn't have an accident. It's not that important. You don't have to do it. But why do you worry so much? Because we just don't know how to live a peaceful life. And again, one of the reasons for that, again, is we think we're the center of the world, and because of that, we have to do stuff. To understand what I mean, there's a story about perception, because someone also asked me to talk about perceptions. And I was talking this to Ben Akakata early on. It was when he was telling me about he had a conversation with a Muslim in the hospital over in Armidale some time ago, and about sort of the creation of this world, the beginning of this world. And of course, that's a question which is often asked Buddhists. In Buddhism, how did the world start? Was it created by a god, or was it some accident, or was it come science, a big bang? And the answer I gave, which is an important answer, but I'm going to extend it in a way I haven't extended it before, is the story of which any of you will know. I start off, this is using similes to explain very important points. And you take a simile, and it just like the nun with the mouse, and you can see how it builds and builds and builds, and it tells a reason why people keep working so hard for things they don't really need. It's much simpler just to sow a patron than have fields and cows and boys and other workers. Keep it simple, then you have more peace. But this particular metaphor was about 300, 400 years ago in our planet Earth. Thought the Earth was flat. And to them it was obvious the Earth was flat. Look around, you can see it's flat. And now we know the Earth is not flat at all. It's round, it's a big beach ball. Well, not really a beach ball, but you know, it's round, it's a sphere. And you all know that now, you accept that. It's got limited area. There's only a certain amount of area on this planet Earth. But it's got no edges, no beginnings, no ends, no boundaries as planet Earth. You know that now. In the old days, they thought it did have an edge. If you sailed in the boat far enough, you'd fall off the edge. Don't laugh, because people thought that was really serious. And you've got similar misperceptions, as you'll find out, as this little metaphor is expounded. And I learned that when I was at school. I thought how stupid people were. But then I remember, as a teenager, starting wondering about the edges of the universe, the edge of space. If you go far enough, will you come to the edge of the universe where you can go no further? A big brick wall which you can't climb over, or a razor wire fence with a sign on, the government does not permit anybody to go past this point? Or is it some chasm? Or I try to imagine an end of the universe, an edge, a boundary. And you know, I could never find a good solution to that problem. I knew even at that time, and it's actually a scientific truth, the space in our universe is limited. It doesn't go on forever. It's not infinite, this universe. There's a very good little proof for that in mathematics, but I won't go over that now. But the universe is not infinite. So what happens when you get to the edge of it? And I couldn't figure that one out until I remember at university when the lecturer came on and he actually proved it. He said, that's the answer. The universe has got no boundaries. Just like flat earth, it's not flat, the universe. It's curved. It has no edges to it. No beginnings, no ends. If you go in any direction from here, if you go far enough, it'll take you quite a while. You come back here. You come back to Dhammaloka Centre in Nollamara in Perth, Western Australia. Whichever direction you go. But it's going to take a huge amount of time. Billions of years, but you come back here. Because this universe is also bent. Planet of that universe is curved. It has got limited space without any boundaries at all. There's no boundaries to space. No beginnings, no ends. Now that is a scientific truth. So you can get your head around that. And if you can, we'll go to level 3. Which is the most interesting one. Time. I always wondered, beginning of time, where did this time and the universe in which time sits, where did it begin? And of course that's where people start talking about God. The end of time. Is there sometimes when time's up, finished, no more time, the end of the universe of time? And then I figured out, hey, that's just like the myth of a flat earth with boundaries. You go far enough in one direction, you fall off the edge. That's what people have, and you come to the edge, the beginning. Go forward enough and you come to the edge, the end of time. That makes no sense to me. But it doesn't have to be that way. What if time is not flat? Is also curved. So time has no edges, no boundaries, no beginnings, no ends. And it can even be finite. But never any beginning, never any end. And to these days I always feel that people who still believe in a beginning and an end, a creation, a God, a big bang or something which caused things, they're called flat timers. Like flat earth people. And it never makes any sense. So what you're doing, you're actually changing your perception. Changing your perception to see things in a different way. Just like, imagine 300, 400 years ago, trying to change the perception of a person who thought the earth was flat to realize it's round. Now I'm trying to do the same. Change your perception of time. It's not flat. It's round. So you don't need a beginning. You don't need an end. It's how we change perceptions. And the reason I'm saying this with the talk about being peaceful, solves problems. That's called peace. You can see it clearly, so you don't need to think about these things anymore. Just by changing the way you look at things is how we change, why we solve the problems. Now you can't think that. You can only see that. Which is one of the reasons why people have no peace is because they try to solve the problems of life through thinking and philosophy. and more thinking, 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 thinking. Have you ever noticed that the more you think, the less peace you have? And the only way that I can come across such solutions to see things in a new way, a different way, is learning how to be silent and not to trust my thinking anymore. But why do you people think? You know, in those old days when they had a flat earth, Chinese, they called their country the middle country. Europe, Mediterranean. You know what Mediterranean means? Middle country. Everybody thought they were the center of the world. I remember growing up in London, and we'd have in the school had a big map of the world. And in the maps of the world created in Britain, England was in the top center. And I can't even see it. Even America, you know, that was to the right, almost off the edge. Because they always thought they were the center of the universe. Now, when you went to the United States, you find actually that the United States was in the center. And England was off to one side. And, you know, China was in the United States. Why is that? But when I came to Australia, I still remember, I should have got someone to get this for me. They had the correct map of the world. And the correct map of the world had Australia in the top. Not in the bottom, the top. And Northern Europe was down under. And because they put Australia in the top, it was upside down. So Perth was actually on the east coast of Australia, and Sydney and Melbourne were on the west coast. And it meant that the United States was the far east, and China was the far west. Because they had it upside down. You can imagine just inverting. But at least Australia and New Zealand had their rightful place in the top centre of the map of the world. And I thought, that why is that? We always think we are the centre. And it's because we feel we are the centre of things. That's why we think so much. That's why we have to keep checking our mobile phones. That is why we can't be silent. Because we're too important to stop doing things. So, when you learn how unimportant you really are, be honest about it. It's wonderful being unimportant. What was that great t-shirt which I saw and said, this t-shirt had the three-liner t-shirt. The top line was, nobody is perfect. The second line was, I am a nobody. And the third line, the conclusion, therefore I'm perfect. If you're a somebody, you can't say that, can you? So if you're a nobody, you're perfect. Great, wonderful. So why are you trying to spoil that and be a somebody? I can't understand why people like stand for presidents of the United States. That's you crazy people. And obviously they are. I mean, who would want to be in a position like that? Unless you're mad. And that explains a lot of the reason why we've got the candidates we do. My solution actually was, I can't see why the people can't see these things. I always try to think outside the box. Why don't we outsource, like the executive leaders of our countries? Like Prime Minister of Australia, why does it have to be an Australian? Why limit our options? We've got the whole world to choose from. Let's get the best candidate who can do the job. And imagine if the Prime Minister wasn't actually Australian. He would probably, you know, be less liable to be corrupt, or less liable to be beholden to special interests. You know, you could be more removed and have a bit more objectivity. So I always think that, you know, for our leading presidents and prime ministers, we should outsource it. Why not? We can get much better candidates that way. And, you know, they would just like anyone else, they can hand in their CV and just see who's the best. It's just like, you know, when the last, this is actually true, I really thought of this but I wasn't quick enough, when the last Pope resigned, it was a Pope Benedict, wasn't it? Pope Benedict, he resigned, and so they had to an opening for a new Pope. And somebody did tell me, and this is absolutely true, you don't have to be a cardinal to be a Pope. They can actually, they have the freedom to elect anybody they want. The College of Cardinals in the Catholic Church, they can elect anybody. So when I heard that, I thought, wow, I'm going to send in my CV. Because what a wonderful thing it would be if Ajahn Brahm became elected as the Pope. Number one, it would give... they give this wonderful symbol of interreligious harmony. I mean, what better symbol? If people believe in interreligious harmony, we can work together, why not elect a Buddhist as a Pope? And at least, you know, as Buddhist monks, you know, we've got no scandals about paedophilia or anything, so, you know, that we could clean that problem up with no trouble at all. What else could we do? You know, simplify the Vatican. But anyway, I thought it was a really good idea. Unfortunately, by the time I got my act together, they'd already elected a new one, so I'd have to wait until this present one sort of dies or resigns, and then I can actually see. Now you can actually see what you actually do there, but only a crazy person would want to have a big office like that. But why do people do that? Why do you make work instead of valuing peace? Why is it we're always looking for something to do rather than valuing the free weekend and learning how to do nothing? A lot of times we're afraid of peace. We really are afraid of it. I first saw this when first moved into Serpentine, very beautiful forest, a long way away from the road, and very silent, sometimes no wind. Just walking, the sun had come out just for an hour or two before the rain came back again. Walking between our retreat centre, Jhana Grove, and a monastery, and it was just so quiet. No cars on the road, no wind. It was really peaceful, and it's just absolutely gorgeous having a bit of peace. It was very strange when visitors would come in, they would actually start talking louder than normal, especially young men, and I couldn't understand. Why are you talking louder than normal? And it was, I realized, because they were afraid of the silence. The peace was something they couldn't really hold and feel comfortable with. I remember just, in one of my other experiences as a young man, you know, growing up in London, it's a really busy, noisy city, and you don't have that many sort of parks and places you can go to get a bit of peace and quiet. Not like beautiful Perth. Just go an hour outside the city and you're in the bush, you can find quiet places so easily. But in a place like London, you have to go, you know, 5 or 6 hours to find a bit of solitude and peace and quiet somewhere. So anyway, the places where I used to go to find some solace and some peace and quiet was actually in the old cathedrals. Abbey, it was a huge place. You could find a quiet place just to relax and enjoy the peace. No one would bother you. The walls were just so thick with stone that you couldn't hear any traffic. You can just be by yourself and just... But just before I went out to Thailand to become a monk over 42 years ago, maybe about 43 years ago, I went in there, just really busy day, and just wanted to sit down and have some quiet time. You know what? They'd installed a PA system in Westminster Abbey. The constant announcements, advertising, just sermons going on 24 hours. And I thought, that is sacrilege. You know, I wasn't a Christian, but at least I knew those huge caverns, they'd like be caves in the middle of a city. And they gave you peace and quiet, which was so important. And that had been taken away. Oh, what a sad thing that was, because everybody does need places where we can feel peace and get used to peace. And if we had more peace in people's minds and places where you could find peace, just be by yourself, silent, no need to think, no need to be told what to do. That's my big mistake, keep telling people what to do all the time. I'm trying to say, no, just find some peace and quietness in your heart, then all the solutions will come to you. And it's so hard to find those places these days. But at least you have your own homes. So I advise people a lot, see if you can find a little room in your house or apartment and turn it into your quiet room, peaceful room, your holy room in the house. Many people have actually done that, and I'm very proud of them, and it's amazing the results that has. You come home from work and you're really tired, you're really worn out, burnt out, and you don't need a cup of coffee or a cup of tea or something to eat or watch the TV. What you really need is some time for yourself, a nice peaceful room somewhere. And people have made a peaceful room. Sometimes it's just been a cupboard under the stairs. I remember a couple, they've made a cupboard under their stairs, their quiet room, their shrine room. They put some pictures of sunsets or mountains or anything to give it some atmosphere. And they would go in there whenever they were stressed out, just to find some peace. They didn't need, you know, a talk from a monk like me or some music or anything. That's the last thing they needed, just quietness. Some peace. And they found some amazing results happen there, because they told me once they had two kids, I think about 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, a boy and a girl. The boy was the elder. And like kids being kids, they had a fight. And, you know, just jealousy, the boy actually hit his younger sister, the first time she'd been hit by him. It wasn't really the pain of being hit, it was just the emotional. That's my brother and he's hit me. And so she burst out crying and ran into the house. You know where she ran? Into the quiet room, under the stairs, just to sit there peacefully. And the parents were just so taken by that. She was not usually allowed in there, but she knew somehow that was a safe place. As a 3-year-old, to deal with the emotional stress of a 3-year-old being hit by the brother. Now that was really important, to have that quiet place. And if you have quiet places in your house, a place where you can find some peace really quickly, very easily, you'll find your health will improve, and a lot of the emotional problems which people face in our modern world will also decline. Because you don't need so much medication or counselling. Sometimes you do need that, but before it gets to that point, just to be able to find a nice quiet place where you can find some peace and you get used to it and not be afraid of it. That means that you will settle down and become calm. All of your metabolism will drop, the problems will disappear, and you won't think so much. Many of the quiet places which I've been to in my life, they're sometimes so peaceful you can't think in them. I remember going to some of these really nice caves in Thailand when I was a monk, and they were so silent, the deep caves which you can go into. There's no noise in there at all. You can have a storm outside, thunder and lightning, but inside you can't hear it. And when you went into those very, very deep silent caves, it was so silent, so peaceful, that even though I had things to think about, you just couldn't think anymore. The silence, the peace outside, just dampened all of your thoughts, and so you really became so incredibly peaceful. I remember going into, I'm going to my peace stories now. I remember going to this, one of our monasteries in UK when it was first started, and it was one of these incredible cold winters in Sussex in UK. And I remember because somebody showed me the article in a newspaper, minus 26 degrees it was that night. And the following morning I decided to go for a walk in the forest, because I was a visiting monk, didn't have any duties to do. And imagine, just the night was minus 26, so it must have been about minus 15 or minus 20, totally covered with snow, and no one was out and about. Only mad monks and Englishmen go out in that type of temperature. But it was absolutely magic, because there was no sound of any cars at all, because you couldn't drive. All the roads were sort of covered with ice and snow, and no birds or animals around, because they were all hibernating at that time of the year. And again, no other people at all. And that morning there was no wind, All I could hear was the crunch of the snow under my shoes. And when I stopped walking, it's like the whole world stopped. Literally. There's no sound at all. And when I stopped, I just could not think. Everything went peaceful inside. And to this day, it's one of the most magic moments of my life. Walking in the sub-zero temperatures. Had a lot of clothing on. Now, in the quietness, the silence. And it was just such a beautiful experience. Peace, at last. And maybe because I'm a monk, I'm not afraid of peace. That I can encourage it. And whenever I find it, I just grab it with both hands and enjoy it. But peace is very shy. If you call out her name, she will run away. You have to be very peaceful. Otherwise peace runs away. When you have that type of peace, it's so hard to get angry anymore. Because the peace regenerates your brain. And it brings even love into your heart. Have you ever noticed that what makes us upset and angry is just too much thinking? Number one, it tires us out so much. You have so many problems answers for. And can you ever find those answers? You can when you stop thinking. There you find the answer, in the peace. If you can actually learn to find peace outside in the world and to allow it to come into you, you don't really need to come to places like this all that often. Because you have it inside your heart. And that is where you're not anymore the center of the world. The world is round. It's got no edges to it. And when you find that peace, you too have no edges anymore. As I said to someone just beforehand, I think they've gone back now, they were getting married tomorrow, so they wanted some marriage advice. And of course, being a monk who's never been married, I'm the best person to come to. But this was great advice. And it's one of the advice I often give, and you probably heard it before, but this is where it fits into this talk about not being the center of the world. And that way you can find peace. And that is where I told them. And they hadn't heard this before, so it worked for them. Looked at the bride-to-be tomorrow. She's getting married in Kings Park. Said, tomorrow you're going to be a married woman. From tomorrow on, you must never think of yourself. Looked at the guy, and it actually worked again. I don't know if he's here. When I looked at him and said, you're going to be married tomorrow, you must not think of yourself from tomorrow on. He paused. He didn't say yes as quickly as the woman did. I don't know why men have to consider this, but eventually he gave in and said, yes, okay. Maybe reluctantly, but he agreed. Honestly, guys, that's true. I've done this so many times. That's actually what it's like. But anyway, then looking at him, I said, you're going to be married man tomorrow, so you must not think of your wife from tomorrow on. And looked at the wife and said, you must not think of your husband from tomorrow on. And she really was confused. She looked at me and just, what the hell is he saying? And that's where you get this third option. You're not the center of the world, nor do you give everything to other people. So from tomorrow on, you must only think of us. Not him, not her, not me, but only think of us. And that is where we don't become the center of the world anymore. It's not about me anymore. If you want some peace in your life, it's not about me. It's not about my religion, my race, my political parties. That's where we got all the problems from. Liberal versus Labour, Democrats versus Republicans. It's not Democrats or Republicans, it's us! We the people, I think it says in the Declaration of Independence. We! Not the Republican Party, not the Democrat Party, not the Independents. We, for goodness sake. Not the whites, not the blacks, not the Hispanics. We! Not the men, not the women, not the LGBTs.
Did I miss something out there? I think I got most of them. No, it's we, the whole lot. We're in it together. So when we don't become centre of the universe anymore, then you don't need to answer your mobile phone so often. Then you're not so important. You don't have to do so much work. Then you can actually find that you have time when you're not so important. Then you can realize that you don't need so much. Like that nun didn't need the cow. What's wrong with just patching a small piece on your robe instead of doing all this other stuff? Can you see how our world has followed that same trajectory as that nun? Fortunately, she could actually stop and go back again to just patching her robe without any of these other things. Living a simple life. Didn't have much stuff, but had a lot of time and a lot of peace. Peace. Why is it that we value things rather than peace? It is because we assume we're the center of the world. It's not. This world is round. We're all included. Life is a relationship. Always will be. It's not about you. It's about what happens between you and the world. It's us. If you understand that, then you will never be afraid of peace. And then maybe we can have a more peaceful world. A more peace in our families. And most importantly, more peace inside your own heart. To learn, you don't need much. You don't need to change much. You can find peace at any time. And you find it's only the thinking and the worrying that is its biggest obstacle. So and know you are peace. It's always there when you stop talking about it. Thank you. Very good, thank you. Okay, let's see what questions I've got now. I was hoping when I said you don't need to turn on your mobile phones that no one would email me any questions. But it doesn't look like it's worked. Anyway, here we go. From USA, from England, from Spain. It's a great question. Should monks be allowed to have smartphones since we know that there are inappropriate things on the internet? I do not have a smartphone. I think one of the few monks, senior monks, who doesn't have a smartphone. And I travel all over the world. Don't need a smartphone. I do have a tablet, which I don't always turn on, so people can email me, but I can answer those emails when I want. It means you are a slave to the smartphone. So, some people say, oh, but you've got to have it, it's a modern world. I'd die if I had a smartphone. People are always calling you up at all hours, and I've seen people do that. It's a crazy thing to have. Why do you? I live a wonderful life without a smartphone, and I'm spiritual director of the Buddhist Society of West Australia, not dictator. I am the abbot of Bodhinyana Monastery, run Jhana Grove, look after Dhammasara, spiritual advisor of the Buddhist Society of Victoria, spiritual director of the Buddhist Santi Monastery, spiritual patron of the Buddhist Fellowship in Singapore, spiritual boss of Bodhinyana Singapore, Ajahn Brahm Centre in Colombo. Australia Sangha Association as well. I've got so many responsibilities and no smartphone. It's brilliant. So I can do that. And that's the only reason you can get a bit of peace and quiet every now and again. Because people aren't always calling you up because they know they can't and they don't need to. So you make a stand sometimes. Some people have to make a stand. And if a monk can't make a stand and not have a mobile phone, you don't need it. It's not necessary. And I don't know how many times you've seen people, especially kids, they're in a shopping centre and they're talking to someone on their cell phone and the person's just standing over there. I just, hey guys, can't you just use your mouth and just talk?
You don't need to text each other. So it's much more peaceful. Because sometimes also that when you're talking face to face, actually you pick up so much more than when you're texting or you're just on a machine like this. You actually see somebody. You know, one of the most difficult things, because you know, I've been on TV a few times, one of the most difficult things is talking to a camera. That's happened a few times, you know, in a studio. And you've just got a camera. And these days, in these studios, there's not even a person behind the camera. It's all done digitally, like a robot. And the people are just, you know, just in a big room. You can't even see them. And the camera moves by itself. And you know, that's one of the most difficult things ever to do. You know, to talk to a camera, not to a person. And that's, it's much nicer here because there's people in front of you. You can actually see people's expressions and pick up on you. That's real. So anyway, I don't have a smartphone and I don't want one. People have offered me smartphones, you know, for free, here you have it, but no way. From England, I am undecided about a career move into teaching at high school. I was a teacher at high school. So it's like a career path into being a monk. Or to choose between a more peaceful role that has less responsibility. I'm torn between these two livelihoods. Any advice? I don't know what the other more peaceful role is. But, you know, if you can find a more peaceful role, brilliant. But, you know, if you're a teacher, if you're meant to be a teacher, you know, it's very peaceful. You get a lot of fulfillment out of it. But unfortunately, sometimes you try being a teacher, it's just not who you are. And I've seen people like that when I was teaching, and they just have a difficult time. But other people, they're just born teachers, and that's who they're meant to be. And so, great, go for it. So, find a more peaceful role that has less responsibility. Yeah, it'd be great if you can. And lastly, from Spain, I have friends that are struggling in life for doing opposite things to what the Buddha teaches. How can I help them if they don't want to listen? A lot of people don't want to listen, but you keep talking to them. Wear them down. Because after a while, you keep talking and talking and talking to people. And it gets in eventually. If it's a beautiful teaching, if it makes sense, after a while, they tend to listen. And it's surprising. Oh, there was, I won't say who he is, but it's one of our ex-presidents, and his wife would never, ever come to this centre, never come. He would come, you know, every week or 2 weeks, but she would never come. But then she got sick with the cancer, was dying, and he told me he was so surprised how much Buddhism she knew. She'd never been here. And the husband had never actually taught her Buddhism, but she just picked it up through osmosis. You know, just because this is who this man was, the husband was, and it sort of picked it up. And that's the same way that if you have friends who are struggling in life and doing the opposite things to what Buddha teaches, how can I help them? Don't try to help them. Just be a good person yourself. And just associate with them. And you'll be surprised, many of the Buddha's teachings, which you never taught them, they will learn. They will pick it up by themselves. What was it? We went to a lunch down a Sri Lankan house today. And the two kids, how old were they? The kids, 5 and 10. Okay, the 5-year-old, they were just talking apparently in the car because they were, I think, in Melbourne to see the snow, and the car skidded, and they came really close to going over the edge. And apparently the boy said, I mean, because that happened almost to me when I was in the snow growing up, my father driving in the car in the snow, his span went round and round and round. You know, lost total control of the car. And when he finished, he was sweating, you know, really so happy that we'd survive. Because when you have loads of control, you can hit something, hit another car, anything could happen. But me, apparently, I told, because they never let me forget this, after they stopped spinning, I was so impressed, I said, Dad, do it again! And apparently, that's what this 5-year-old said as well. Ah, Dad, do it again! But then they started talking about, you know, dying. What happens if we die? And our Buddhist family said, oh yeah, you know, you come back again, you get reborn again. And what did the kids say? They said, and what happens after that? Then you live and you die again, you come back again. And what happens after that? And you come back again. And then what did he say? He said, oh no, I don't want to do that.
He was really wise, almost like a screen winner, or so on. So where did he get that from? It just, people pick it up by osmosis. So if people are struggling in life, doing opposite things to, you know, what is wise, just hang out with them, and eventually osmosis will happen, and they just learn. And that's the best way of teaching. If you try and lecture them and sermonize, it will really chase them away. So don't just be sort of an evangelical Buddhist, for goodness sake. Just be you, be kind, be peaceful. And that is what they will hear. Okay, any questions from the floor here? Is anyone in here? Excellent, you've understood. Peace. Oh no, I miss them. Today's joke, didn't I give a joke today? Okay, what was one of the terrible jokes I said to the kids this morning? Okay, this is, now you asked for this, remember, it's your fault. You know, there's a pile of books fell on me this week. I can only blame myself. That's your fault. That's a kid's joke. Okay, so let's pay respect to the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha before I get into more trouble.
Arahant Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami Supatipanno.